Okay, here's a quick quiz. Did you play a musical instrument in high school and then perhaps put it away into the back of your closet when little things like career and family came to dominate your days and nights? Well, if so, a new class wants to reunite you with that dusty old trumpet or saxophone and get you playing with other musicians again in front of an actual audience. It's called the Jazz Band Masterclass, and the man who leads the program is Jeff Antoniak. He's a professional saxophonist and a professor of music at Towson University, and he gets involved in all kinds of interesting projects. He just hosted a concert and lecture this week for the Latin American Folk Institute, exploring the connections between John Coltrane's jazz and the rhythms found in Latin music. Perfect timing, because yesterday was John Coltrane's birthday. Jeff Antoniak joins us today with his sax to talk about John Coltrane and to talk about his masterclass. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to be here.
And you have your saxophone. We know you're a sax player. You have your prop with you here.
Yep.
If you're a sax player, is it possible to not be influenced by John Coltrane's work?
I don't think so. I actually tried not to be influenced by him in college. Everybody was into John Coltrane. You know, what you did after class is went home, turned the lights down, and turned on Coltrane as loud as possible, and, you know, closed your eyes and look hip. And, you know, I thought, well, okay, everybody else is doing this. So I certainly loved and appreciated Coltrane, but I didn't really dig into it because everybody else was, it seemed, you know, like what you had to do. But over the years, I just keep coming back to it. And I think everybody does.
At some point, you have to pay attention.
Yep. And also non-jazz people. I mean, you know, I remember reading liner notes, whether it's, you know, Bono from U2 or Sting or whoever you want to talk about.
I must admit, though, the first thing I think of when I think of John Coltrane, not Latin grooves. That's not what leaps to mind.
You're exactly right. That's also what I thought when I was approached about doing this concert. Latin Coltrane. Oh, really? Okay. So, but it piqued my interest because either I was going to learn something or I was going to have to create something. So, all right, fair enough. Let's see where this
you're going to have to fake it? Well, hopefully you didn't have to fake it.
Well, you know, that's what jazz musicians do best.
Improvise.
Exactly.
Okay, but what did you find?
Well, what I found is exactly what you said. I think John Coltrane recorded exactly one Latin tune in his whole life of the 70 albums he made or something. Of course, Stan Getz basically popularized bossa nova in this country along with Charlie Bird and people like that.
So there are lots of jazz people that are more obviously fitting into this category.
Absolutely. Actually, almost, it was, you know, the bossa nova craze, I guess you could call it, through the 60s. When you made a jazz album in the 60s, you had to put a bossa nova on there. It was just crazy if you didn't. And these days, all jazz musicians, whether you're playing at someone's wedding or if you're playing at a club, you're going to be playing Antonio Carlos Jobim and things like that. Coltrane didn't. He was on his own path. And that path didn't necessarily include Latin music. It was more absolutely African-based.
So where do you find the connection?
The connection is right there, I think, is that the African, West African-based music that Coltrane and especially his drummer Elvin Jones were digging into so deeply, that's the basis of Latin music. The polyrhythmic or the different layers of rhythmic complexity that we find in Africa is what Latin music basically is about. The slave trade into Central and South America, that West African influence mixing with the indigenous cultures there, is what became what we know of when you think of Afro-Cuban music or Cuban music. I put Afro in there. It's you can't really separate them. Afro-Cuban music sounds very African, yet has this Latin flavor. So they have the same roots.
Now you have your saxophone with you today. Mm-hmm. Can you fake some of this for us? Or hopefully illustrate something for us? Can you show us something that John Coltrane played and then something that we could hear the Latin rhythms in?
You're asking a lot. Usually what I do is just play the same notes and expect the drummer to change the groove behind me. And, you know, that's a secret that your listeners now know. So it's all about the drums. But, of course, if you're doing it properly, how you play that melody will change a little bit.
Give us an example of some John Coltrane music.
Absolutely. Well, what I'll do is I'll play the melody to Giant Steps, one of his famous songs off an album called Giant Steps, and a very challenging song. And it's something that we performed in our Coltrane concert. And I'll just play through the melody very quickly the way he recorded it, and then I'll do sort of our Latinized version after that. Thank you. So that song, although it may have been a little hard to hear, was actually sort of a fast-moving bebop tune, I guess, you know, a swing rhythm kind of song. So the way I'm going to do it now, we changed the time. Instead of doing it in 4-4, we're doing it in 7-4, and we're implying a Latin clave rhythm. And, you know, we messed around with the structure of the song a little bit. They're exactly the same notes, but the flavor is a little bit different. So they sound very, very different, yet they were exactly the same notes.
Part of it is you can take a melody of any piece of music and play it in different styles,
mm-hmm.
and you can change the rhythm around. But what is it in John Coltrane's music that makes it additionally easy to convert it into a Latin groove?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I probably could have answered that before being asked to do this challenging concert. I knew it was possible. I didn't know why. But as I started listening to the hundreds of Coltrane tunes, trying to find eight that I wanted to do, I began to see that in his compositions, there's always an underlying rhythm, counterpoint. When we listen to Bach, we may have two or three melodies going on. That's what makes Baroque music sound like Baroque music. In jazz, there's usually a melody, some interesting chords, and the bass player is walking the bass line, but nothing really special. It's just sort of a foundational accompaniment. With Coltrane, instead of having that plain, kind of flat foundational accompaniment, he always has a rhythm going on underneath. So it started, and I was surprised. So I found that once. The next song I listened to, I'm finding it again. So more often than not, I was finding this rhythmic counterpoint. So that made it easy because rhythmic counterpoint is what Latin music is.
When you're talking about music to an audience of maybe non-musicians, do you find it hard sometimes to make that connection of making the audience understand what the heck you're talking about?
Oh, yeah. It's tricky. And I have to be careful not to talk myself into a corner because you're right. If I get rolling and talking too much, I'm going the wrong direction. You're right. The more you talk, the further away you're getting a lot of the time.
So it's shut up and play music.
There is that aspect,
degree.
Which what Miles did great, right? So he had the right idea. On the other hand, when I'm teaching an adult student that is a lawyer or a computer software designer, you know, in their real life, those are intellectual pursuits. And that's kind of how we live our lives in the year 2004 is, you know, thinking through things. So that's a valid way to approach music. You do have to analyze and talk and discuss and why does this work? And you do have to dig. So there's an element of that. So it is important to do it. But you're right. In the final analysis, do all that hard work, do the analysis, and then shut up and play or shut up and listen.
So somewhere in between Miles Davis turning his back on the audience
right.
and a never-ending lecture is where the truth lies.
I guess so. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, given the choice of the two, I'll probably go see Miles.
Okay. Yeah, well, sure. Bring him back. Now, you teach a class. You teach a class which is kind of an open improvisation for people to join or an open jam session for students.
Yeah. It's something I just started this year. It's called Jazz Band Masterclass. And like I mentioned, I teach some adult students. I teach private lessons, and it just seems like a lot of adult students, probably 90% of the people I teach are adults. And they kept, after a while, they got to a point where they could really play pretty well and hold their own. They knew some great Ellington Monk tunes, things like that. And they started asking me, where can I go to play? Is there a community jazz band? Or where can I go sit in? And there's really not much or anything. And what there is, it's, you know, sometimes sort of weird, scary situations. You know, a 20-year-old person that's trying to be a professional musician, sure, go and get beat up, you know, at the local club. But, you know, when you're a 50-year-old, you know, accountant or something, maybe that's not exactly the way to go. So after years of hearing this question, it finally occurred to me, why don't I try to put together something like that on my own? So saxophones, trumpets, flute, bass, drums, guitar, the whole bit, you know, a jazz group with three horns and four rhythm section players.
So you've assembled this group for players to have this kind of comfortable first experience with
right.
an open jam session,
yeah.
open mic?
Exactly. So it's a combination of what you said. There's a lot of playing involved because these people practice at home alone. But jazz is not about playing on your own. Jazz is about an interaction with a group.
Were you finding that you were encountering a lot of frustrated musicians who had been playing music maybe in high school and then let it slide over the years and wanted to kind of revisit that portion of their lives?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm actually surprised, but I guess I shouldn't be, that every time I'm out on a gig, numerous people come up to me, you know, dentist comes up to me and tells me, oh, yeah, I used to play, you know, high school, all these kind of stories. And music is one of those things that once you've played, even a little bit, 20 years later, it's going to come back and bug you. Why did I quit? Oh, I should play again. Let me dust off the guitar. For a non-professional musician to try to put a group together, that's impossible, that network. So that's been a lot of what I'm doing. The hard work for me is to try to bring these people together, and then I coach these groups. And the ball is really starting rolling. I started off with one group. Those are the people I had. In 7 short months, there are now 4 groups meeting regularly.
Four groups of all amateur musicians?
Yeah,
who...
7 people in each group, so 28 people. And I've got a waiting list for some people because, of course, the level of experience is important. Some people are almost professional level, but they have a day job. Some people maybe played classical music their whole life but have never improvised, never played jazz. So when I put these groups together, I'm very sensitive to not have anyone be thoroughly bored or absolutely left in the dust.
This sounds a bit like that movie, The School of Rock.
Exactly.
Except with adult players.
Exactly. But for, you know, everybody there listening to the radio, I don't look like Jack Black. That's
I can vouch for that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Not quite as an intimidating presence. That's true.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's slightly less insane. But but I've been thinking about that.
Have these groups performed in front of audiences? Where do they go? How does it work?
Yeah. I live in Annapolis right now, and there's a club in Annapolis called 49 West that has live music weekly. So I know the owner, and he was happy to rent out their music room to me on Saturday afternoon. So the groups have been rehearsing there, and we've done some outdoor concerts in Annapolis, like an arts fair kind of thing. We've played some Sunday nights at 49 West where it's, you know, cover charge, jazz club, and it's open to the public. And these people, their friends and family, coworkers who have maybe never heard them play, are able to come out. And it's like a party in there because, you know, one of the guys is a 50-year-old software engineer and has never played the saxophone in public. And he had like 20 people from work come. They were screaming when he was playing.
How terrifying was that moment for him when he...
I think it was terrifying for him, and it was frustrating for me because as a professional musician, I can't remember the last time people screamed for my playing. So, you know, I was a little jealous, I must say, but I love it. It's great, you know, to see these people... this is a dream that, you know, maybe to play the saxophone. And sure, in secret, they dreamed about playing in public in a jazz club, people clapping for them. But they probably never imagined that would happen. Let me just play the saxophone in the basement. So it's really cool to see, you know, some of these dreams coming together.
This is a program, if people are interested, this is a program you have to pay to be in this with you.
It's essentially a group lesson, that kind of thing.
It is a lesson, but it's a lesson where you also end up with a band. Can they... then graduate to other gigs? Are they going to get some paid gigs?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's something I don't see as competing with this program that I have. I would love it if people either outgrow the program, and that leaves a space for another person to come in. It's been a good networking thing because in some of the more advanced groups, like I say, these people, most of your audience could go to a restaurant and hear these people play and not know that they're not professionals. So it's been great because these borderline professional people, again, the networking thing, you're a graphic designer all day long. You don't know any other musicians. But now there are 28 or so people involved in the program right now that know each other, networking. They're starting to hire each other for little neighborhood gigs.
So it's kind of like a dating service for musicians.
Wow, I hadn't thought about it that way.
Everyone makes their own little videotape.
Right. Well, there's no rules about, you know... romance inside the group, so there's maybe things going on I'm unaware about.
Okay. Now, who can join this? Is it any age, any level of experience?
I'd say the average age might be 45 or something like that, but there are a couple high school kids playing who are imagining going on to college, going to the Berklee School or going to, Indiana, big music career. So they and their parents are looking at this like preparation because I'm really running this like a university level jazz combo class. And I've got a 68-year-old guy who, very interesting, he used to know Clifford Brown, one of the greatest trumpet players ever to walk the earth, happened to be from Dover, Delaware, and died extremely young. He was in his 20s. But he, along with Sonny Rollins and Coltrane, basically invented bebop. this guy used to play in big bands in the area with Clifford Brown, which, you know, is amazing to meet somebody like this. So he had a very successful construction business his whole life. His son's taken that over, so now he's back on the trumpet having a great time. There's actually a web designer who I'd guess is about 40 years old. He had never played an instrument in his life, and he's been playing trumpet for a year and a half. So he's still sort of a baby on the trumpet, but he's in the class sounding great because he's listened to music for 40 years. And listening for 40 years is way more important than whatever, you know, having the music in your head and your heart. That's a head start versus a high school kid whose fingers go a mile a minute but doesn't really know what they're trying to say or doesn't really know what jazz sounds like.
What's the name of the class?
It's called Jazz Band Masterclass.
Jazz Band Masterclass.
And if anyone's interested in more information, they can go to jazzbandmasterclass.com.
Just as simple as that. Jazzbandmasterclass.com.
Yeah.
Can we finish today with some live music, some John Coltrane?
Absolutely.
Since yesterday was the anniversary of his birthday?
You bet.
What are you going to play?
I think I'm going to play a great blues of his called Bessie's Blues.
Okay. Jeff Antoniak, unaccompanied here in the studio.
Great.
Good dining in a room the size of an airplane hangar. At 13 before the hour, this is Metro Connection on WAMU.